If you run a company or manage a team, hiring qualified people quickly can make or break your business. Imagine a position of need going unfilled for weeks or even months because you just can't seem to find the right candidate. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. This makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, there's no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts. You only pay for results on your job post. Just in the last minute that I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data, worldwide. Now that is fast. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BWN. Go to Indeed.com/BWN right now to support this podcast. Indeed.com/BWN. Terms and conditions apply.
Craving your next action-packed adventure? Audible delivers thrills of every kind on your command, like Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, where a lone astronaut must save humanity from extinction, narrated with stunning intensity by Ray Porter. From electrifying suspense and daring quests to spine-tingling horror and romance in far-off realms, unleash your adventurous side with gripping titles that'll keep you guessing. Discover exclusive Audible originals, hotly anticipated new releases, and must-listen bestsellers that hook you from the first minute. Because Audible knows there's no greater thrill than the one that speaks to you. Discover what lies beyond the edge of your seat. Start your free 30-day trial at audible.com/WonderyUS. That's audible.com/WonderyUS.
This is the Carolina Insider from Learfield.
It's the Carolina Insider podcast back again. Jones Adam here with you. Thanks for being with us. Adam, what's up?
The rare bye week, Jones.
It is rare.
It's over now, and it won't happen again for a long time.
You know, I used to call it a week off. Like, I'd always say, hey, coach, what'd you guys do your week off? Yeah. And it's not really that.
It's a Saturday off.
Yeah. Essentially, the coaches took one day off. That's exactly right, for football. I mean, they practiced a little differently. You know, Larry Fedora, and this isn't secret. I mean, he said this plenty of times, that early in the week, they almost didn't rep their number one guys at all, which is the right thing to do. He said that really in practice, it was the twos, the threes, and guys who are redshirting that practiced. And then they got a little bit of early start for Georgia Tech after that. But really, don't you think? I mean, the number one goal. Well, hold on, before I get to that. Then the coaches all went out and did recruiting on Friday. It's one of their biggest recruiting weekends, which makes sense. And then Saturday, they took completely off. Larry Fedora said he turned on ESPN game day and did not stop watching until the end of the Clemson-Florida State game after midnight. So he watched football. He personally watched football all day long. But then they get right back to it. And they do get a little bit of extra practice, which I guess in theory is good against Georgia Tech, although twice Carolina's had a bye week before the Georgia Tech game in Larry Fedora's tenure, and they lost both those games. And then in the two times that they've beaten Georgia Tech since Larry Fedora's been the head coach, they didn't have a week off, so who knows. But anyway, to me, the only thing that mattered in this bye week for Carolina was getting healthy, was resting some.
Yeah, 7 extra days.
Yes.
And not like resting some, like everybody gets to take a nap from 2 to 4.
But just, although, wouldn't that be nice?
Man, you don't realize how awesome naps are until you get old. When you're young and you can take naps, it's totally wasted on the youth of America.
I may start doing that. Just shut my door.
There's no time now.
Turning the lights off.
Yeah, but people frown on it when you sleep at your desk.
Recharge the battery.
You get a bad rep when you're laying with your head on your desk and slumped over. And also,
I'm not going to say I've never done it before.
Oh, no. No. Some of those days after 9 o'clock, 9:30 basketball games, maybe like 2, 2:30, little siesta. It seems to work in other countries. Why not here? But yeah, I mean, and not, so not like that kind of rest, but like the not slamming your body into other bodies at 100 miles an hour rest, that kind of rest.
Well, and Larry Fedora on Monday said physical and mental rest. And I do think that's true. I mean, just when you're in the grind of the every week, your game plan, and not to mention school, I mean, just everything that these guys on the team are dealing with, not to mention just being a 19 or 20 year old person where you got a lot of stuff going on. I do think it was incredibly important week for Carolina to reset a little bit and refresh. Now, you never know how they're going to play coming out of it, because Carolina played pretty well, I thought, in the Virginia game, the last game before the break. But they needed it badly. But it will be interesting to see how they come out, because sometimes teams come out and you can tell they look refreshed, and then sometimes it takes two quarters or something to kind of get going again.
Well, and it's like all those scientific studies or whatever that they'll put out that say momentum's not a real thing and try to convince you that that doesn't exist.
Come on.
And I understand that, like, you can't put it in a bottle and then study it in a lab or whatever, but sometimes teams just get to playing a certain way and they can't stop playing that way, either good or bad. And sometimes when you take the break, it gets you out of whatever that was making you do that. And sometimes that could happen. That could happen to Carolina here, or it could not. But I just don't think there's any way to know until they run out on the field at 12:30, which is when they announce the game time for against Georgia Tech.
That's a thumbs down to get a 12:30 for that game,
especially on homecoming.
Yeah,
because some people really get into the homecoming activities. You, of course, I mean, you're actually, you know, doing the game, so it's not like you're going to watch the floats or whatever, if they even still do that.
Seen enough floats.
I think that was in 1978 was the last time they did that. But 12:30 for homecoming is kind of weak.
Did you watch it? I know you were in Chicago following the Cubs, who are, they're still alive.
Yeah.
And I was in Orlando following Mickey and Minnie.
And you're still alive.
And I'm still alive. Did you watch any other games?
I watched some games. I want you to tell everyone what you texted me about that one game that you watched in a weird location. And if you don't represent it accurately, I'm going to read it. Because we both watched part, not together, but in our far-flung locations, of NC State Boston College.
Yep.
But you watched it in a different place than
I did. You asked me, you said, hey, are you watching the end of this NC State Boston College game?
That is not what I said, but that's what I would like to say for podcast purposes. Yeah.
And I said, I am indeed. fine, sir. And I said, I don't remember my exact verbiage.
You said, I just watch ESPN'd it in the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. Were you getting your hair done?
I think it's fair to say that I was the only person in the United States that caught the fourth quarter, or not even that, like the last 2 minutes of State BC on Watch ESPN in the Bippity Boppity Boutique.
Well, so
I have that market to myself.
Some people don't know what that is, like I do, because I've been there, but some people may not.
Well, your kids go, and so I have a daughter and a son, and our daughter was getting, you get like fancy hairdo, which she chose Disney Diva. So you get fancy hairdo and like makeup, and you get all princessed up. But I did think it's interesting, because it's like, what do you do with the boys during that time?
Yeah,
like, so Walker went in there, and basically we paid $20 for them to comb his hair to the side and then get a foam shield and sword to make him a quote-unquote knight. Here, take my money, Disney. You don't have enough of it. Well, here's an extra $25.
It's clearly for girls.
Oh, yeah.
But they know that some people have both. And are going to feel guilty.
Yeah.
And so they're like, why don't we make up some nonsense to get them to give us some more money? But like, was there not an option to like make him a Jedi or something?
No, we did do the Jedi training.
Yeah, how was that?
That was awesome. I'm not going to lie. That would have been something when I was little would have been cool. Because you actually fight Darth Vader.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
It really was cool.
But was it pandemonium to try to – didn't you have to go crazy early?
You have to go super early. Yeah. My wife ran across – and like you have to have kids when you get in line. Like, you can't just the parent go get in line and, like, hold the place.
You can't leave your kid in,
right.
in like, in bed with dad or something.
Right, right. Yeah. So you have to have the kids with you. So, and it's like, you know, it's like roller derby. All the parents are, like, running into each other. You got the big strollers, like, bumping each other out of the way. And so I just stayed in the – so what we did is I stayed behind with the stroller, and Elizabeth was, like, running with each kid in a hand, like, running. And so we got it. That's all that matters. We got it.
And they both, I saw the footage of them dueling with Darth Vader, and it appeared to me they both defeated Darth Vader from what I saw.
Yeah. Sabers down, saber to the ready position, shoulder strike, block, duck, head strike. That was the Jedi training right there.
And you and I both came of age in a time when Star Wars was not affiliated with Disney.
Right.
And I feel like we missed out.
You know what's funny? I was telling Elizabeth that she didn't know that, and I was like, I said, you know what I think is what makes Disney really good? I said, when they see that somebody else has something that's good, they just buy it from them. It's like, here, Pixar, give me Toy Story.
We have tried to do similar things and failed. We will just buy yours and take it as our own.
Just give me yours.
Here's a whole section of the park that is now Star Wars. Go away, Jaws. We don't like you anymore. You were good in the 80s. Did you ride the Star Wars ride, or are they too little for that?
No, they did, and that was fun, actually.
It's awesome now.
Really
it used to be bad.
You know they're doing a whole Star Wars park.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
When's it going to open?
I don't know. We met Chewie and Kylo Ren, so that was it was fun.
Does Chewie talk, or does he just give
he does that, which is great. And so I tried. I was like, we're walking out, and I was like, hey, Walkman, you want to give Chewie a high five? And they're like, oh, no. They're like, Chewie doesn't understand what high fives are.
What?
He doesn't understand the human. Like, they're trying to, like, keep it so, in wrestling, what do they call it, kayfabe, where it's, like, they're trying to make sure that it's in character the whole time. You know, so, like, Chewie, the character, wouldn't understand what a high five is because he's from Kashyyyk or whatever.
He's not a moron. He knows what a high five
saying,
is.
I'm just saying, like my four-year-old's going to know, you know? But anyway.
Well, he hangs out with Han Solo. You think Han Solo doesn't high five people?
I don't know that answer.
That doesn't make any sense.
I know. But anyway, so I watched State B. So anyway, back to what's important. So I saw the end of State BC from Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, and I saw a fair amount of Clemson, Florida State.
Yeah.
But really, other than that, I didn't see much else. So we know what Georgia Tech and Duke had, like, a crazy game, and Justin Thomas went crazy at 450 some odd yards of total offense by himself. That's not good. Tech's like rounding into shape for the Tar Heels to play them. So they won a close game. Virginia almost beat Louisville.
Yeah.
But didn't.
No.
And was that it? Was there anything? Oh, and Pitt, Virginia Tech was on Thursday night.
Right.
What was Pittsburgh doing? I don't understand why Pitt, and we talked a little bit about this before we started. I don't understand why Pitt refused to change the style of defense. It was, I mean, to the point that even Jesse Palmer was killing him for it. But he was right. Pat Narduzzi, who is clearly a very good defensive coach, I mean, that's how he's built his whole career. But they haven't all year. They keep playing this 8-9 men to stop the run. And then you are leaving your corners out there, and they can't guard anybody. And honestly, in football now, it's almost impossible to guard anybody one-on-one all the time. I mean, you can get a couple plays where you're going to do it, but it was just crazy.
Well, and when you make even Virginia Tech get into the mode of, if it gets close, we'll just fling it down the field.
That's all they did every play.
Anytime Pittsburgh got close, you started feeling good because, of course, the Tar Heels wanted
Pittsburgh to win.
So, you know, Pittsburgh would draw close, and I'd start thinking, oh, I got a chance here. Virginia Tech would take the first snap, and it was like playing in the backyard with, like, your little kid.
Yeah.
And you're like, we'll just fling it down the field, and they'll go up and catch it and or get a penalty. That reminds me of another question I had, and I think it might have been in the Virginia-Louisville game, but it might have been another game where two or three times down on the goal line, they threw the fade route on the goal line, which people hate.
Yeah. Unless you got Bug Howard.
Right, yeah, that makes it okay.
Yeah.
Do you think, what percent of the reason that so many coaches do that, do you think is because you might get pass interference?
Oh, I think it increases your chances of success. It's hard to defend that style of pass anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have thrown a flag on 95% of those on one team or the other, and I don't think Virginia Tech got an offensive pass interference the whole time, which blows my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, at some point, you got to throw – I mean, it's not like the Virginia Tech receivers were just hanging out and getting bear hugged. I mean, it was just like a fight every time. I don't know what to do about it, though, because, I mean, you clearly the rule has to stay in. I mean, pass interference isn't going anywhere, but I don't know a better way to manage it.
I think it's kind of like how college basketball has gotten where there's so much running into each other. Like, yeah. You watch a game on ESPN Classic, if that's still a real channel, and there's no contact. Even from, like, late 80s, early 90s Bloody Montrose era when we all thought, oh, it's really rough.
Yeah.
But you compare that to now and it's nothing.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know how to stop that anymore. It's too far out of the bottle.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, somebody started having, and I don't know who it was in college basketball. Certainly.
I do.
Well, the Knicks kind of in pro ball started doing it so much and uglying up games and just roughing people up. And, you know, the Pistons were a little bit like that, but really it felt like kind of those mid-90s, early 90s Knicks teams that started doing it. And then then as soon as somebody has success to something, of course, then everybody just copies it. And then it goes on. I don't know what to do about pass interference, though, but it's just, I mean, you could throw it every single time.
Well, and clearly, having listened to the podcast,
yeah,
both Pat Narduzzi and Jimbo Fisher got fines from the ACC.
Jimbo Fisher went all in, didn't he?
Well, I was going to ask you about this. So Jimbo Fisher got fined $20,000, and Pat Narduzzi got fined $5,000.
I didn't see what Pat Narduzzi said.
I'm about to tell you.
Oh, okay.
Pat Narduzzi said he felt like there were some things out there that were one-sided.
Okay.
To me, that's worse than what Jimbo Fisher said.
Well, but what were the words? Jimbo Fisher had a couple of words in there.
I like how he threw in like a, I'm not going to be all rah-rah boom-bah or whatever. I don't even know what you're talking about, Jimbo Fisher.
What? Hold on. Let's see. What
he called it cowardly.
Yeah, that's what got it.
Is that worse than one-sided?
Yep, it is.
You think so?
Yeah.
Because Pat Narduzzi basically said they were favoring one team. And Jimbo Fisher just said
he also said it. He also said it was gutless and wrong, and he said it was garbage.
He's just saying they're bad at their job.
Yeah.
But Pat Narduzzi is saying they were biased.
I don't know, man. Garbage, cowardly, gutless, and wrong. Those are pretty strong terms.
You think that's over the line?
Yeah, those are pretty strong.
Gutless.
Well, you know what to me is the most amazing part about that? Is that Jimbo Fisher lost his cool enough to say it. Because as a head coach, look, you can complain about officiating all you want behind closed doors or in your official communication with the league. You can't say that if you're the head coach. Because as soon as you say that, you're opening it up for your players to think that, blame things on that. And, you know, coaches and Larry Fedoras, you know, talks about, handling adversity and all those things. Well, how can you, as the head coach, react that way to clear adversity? I'm not saying that the call was that he's wrong in what he was thinking.
Right.
But how can you say that as the head coach and then expect your team to not do the same thing?
Well, it wasn't like they interviewed him on the field and he said that.
Right. It wasn't right after the moment. Yeah. I mean, that was his post-game press conference, right?
Yeah.
Where you've had... I mean, not a long time, but 15 minutes.
Yeah, 10, 15 minutes.
To cool off a little bit.
And you're sitting at a podium, and, like, you know they're going to ask you questions. And you know, I mean, Florida State, their SID folks are some of the best anywhere,
yeah.
I think. You know they probably told them
right. They're
going to ask you about this.
Sure.
So you might want to think about your answer and maybe told him a couple things he could say. But it didn't seem like he cared about that.
No, I was surprised that they said it that way. And Pat Narduzzi's like a crazy man on the sidelines. I mean, there were some times – and now I was watching that game on my iPad, like in the hotel room. So, but he was, I mean, the stuff where he was very clearly using some strong language and just running, throwing his headset down.
Yeah.
His player caught a pass where there was a lot of contact. He ran out there and like gave him a slap on the backside and was like all demonstrative about it, like ran like 30 yards to do so. It's like, what are you doing?
I think that's the difference between being a coordinator and a coach.
Yeah.
Like, you can act that way as a coordinator, especially, like, on the practice field or something. You know, you can really be that guy. But when you're the head coach, I think you got to act differently on the game field.
Well, and I'm not Yeah, I mean, Larry Fedora picked up a big penalty in the Georgia game. He also, you know, very much owned that in the post game that particular. And that's not to say that he or any other coach hasn't gotten fired up before or hasn't done something. But I just thought Pat Narduzzi's was over the top compared to even when inevitably some coach is going to get fired up at some point in time.
Well, Jimbo Fisher got the 15-yard penalty related to the penalty that he was complaining about. Yeah. And I thought
– which was a chop block.
Yeah. And it seemed to me to not be a chop block, but who knows. But and I think the cowardly, gutless thing that he said was more in relation to his 15-yard penalty rather than the chop block penalty. And so – I don't know. I mean, if he's right that they missed the call, I think he's got a point that then they come, oh, well, we're going to throw a flag on you too.
Yeah.
And it was a huge part of the game. Like, they probably, they win the game if that doesn't happen.
Because they had the lead and the ball at that point in time. Is that right? And Dalvin Cook had just busted a long run.
And went from, like, first and 10 to something in 26.
Oh, yeah.
And Jimbo Fisher also said they didn't mark the penalty correctly. Because he said that if it was a chop block, like, they marked it. From somewhere.
Marking the ball.
Yeah, it seems to be tough these days.
No, it's the most inexact thing of all time. I really believe it's the most inexact thing in football that there is. Because, and I find myself doing this all the time where I'll say, oh, down to the 27. And I'll be like, oh, nope, this is going to mark out the 26. But I mean, and maybe I'm not saying that I'm right all the time either, but it's just. When there's like a yard or 2 yards different sometime, and with Georgia Tech coming up, for some reason I always feel like Georgia Tech gets the ball marked ahead.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're just good at falling forward. I just always feel like they get the ball marked ahead.
Well, you and I have talked about this before. It's the year 2016. Why are we still measuring football first downs with chains?
Yeah, I don't know. They should have some kind of lasers at this point.
Wouldn't that be easy?
I say that in all seriousness.
That's exactly right. Well, and how? And also, when I was watching those games on Saturday, you get so used to seeing the line on the field on TV.
Yep.
Why can't we do that at the stadium?
I don't know. I guess they could.
We could.
Yeah.
That would be better.
Yeah.
It's better to have that there, both for the players. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, how many times you hear him say, well, you got to run to the chain. Oh, while I'm running my 8-yard curl, I got time to look over. Where's that guy with the chain over there? Let me see where he is, and then I'll run my route. You don't have time to do that.
No.
When I ran my 8-yard curls, I never did it that way. So I don't understand why. Like, we used the chains in 1922. And here we are in 2016, found nothing better.
Still using the chains.
We've got nothing better than the chains.
They really could come up with some kind of laser system. Should do that.
Well,
hey, why don't you just create that and boom. Then we don't even have to do the podcast anymore because we'll be hanging out in Disney World the whole time.
At the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique. Well, if we did that, then we would do the podcast from like Cancun.
Yeah.
But what I always like is when they run the chain in and the guy holds the one little thing that marks it. Oh, well, as long as you're going to do it exactly that way, we know it's going to be accurate.
I wonder if they keep the chains for that dramatic moment where they're stretching it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Although you could have the laser, like, slowly shoot from one side to the other. See, you wouldn't lose the dramatics.
No. Well, and you know there'd be one player or two who thought that the laser was like a Star Wars laser, and like if it hit him, he would be injured.
Yeah, they'd be
you'd have guys jumping out of the way, like the Matrix, like dodging out of the way. That would be so much better.
We have a lot of questions that I do want to get to.
About life. Oh, yeah. You bet people have questions
for us. Yes, people
have questions. I've got some questions.
I want to mention some basketball stuff for a second. Well, hold on. First of all, any other games that caught your eye before we move on to basketball? Any other games that – and I'm telling you, that's about all I saw.
Yeah, you named the ones I saw. Because of where I was, people were watching Michigan State, Michigan.
Mm.
And I guess, I don't know, when I think Peppers, I think Julius.
Oh, yeah.
But that guy, Jabril Peppers, he is good at football.
Yeah, he's good.
That's one thing I astutely noticed.
Yeah, he's a
and
player.
I just don't watch Michigan.
Right.
And so I hadn't seen him play.
You sounded so apologetic.
Yeah, like
I'm sorry. I just don't watch Michigan.
Carolina Insider podcast listeners, I just don't watch Michigan. But he's really good. And he seems like the type, because he plays for Michigan and Michigan's good and they're Michigan, we're going to have to start hearing about why he should win the Heisman Trophy. He just doesn't play the right positions.
Yeah, he's good. No, he's really good.
So that's the only other one that I saw any of other than the ones we have talked about.
It's a little bit South Carolina beat Tennessee, and Tennessee had their running back just quit the team.
Yeah, Jalen Hurd.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Well, and so Georgia lost to Florida, huh?
Again, yes. Yeah, Georgia. You know, I wish the Tar Heels, I wish either they could play Georgia in the middle of the year, or Carolina, to me, seems like a team, at least the last couple of years, when the Tar Heels have been good, that they could have really used either just some team that they could beat easily or like an exhibition game.
Yeah.
Because I just feel like Carolina's been so much better. Well, you've heard me say this before. I am a staunch believer that you should play somebody that you can beat in the first week.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's exciting to have all those big games in the first weekend, and I get that, and all the buzz and the talk during the summer. And I get all that. But, man, to me, it's worth playing somebody who – because you're never going to play your best game in the first game. Just never. Not in football.
No.
You just can't. And so to have somebody that you can play 60% of your best game or 40% of your best game and still beat and then be able to work out those things, to me, that makes a lot more sense. And, I mean, because I think if Carolina played Georgia right now,
mm-hmm.
I think the Tar Heels would be a heavy favorite. I mean, the defense for Carolina is just so much better. I mean, you just never know at the beginning of the year. And Trubisky is a different player now than he was then. I mean, it's just different. I do hate that.
Well, and you hate how it's going to affect Carolina's postseason.
Yeah.
Because everybody's going to go, oh, they lost to Georgia, and Georgia's not very good.
Yeah.
Well, not this Georgia.
Right.
A different Georgia and a different Carolina.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and the fact that the Coastal may get decided by the Hurricane game is frustrating. Now, both these teams, I mean, there's still a long way to go. I mean, yeah. Carolina has a better record than the teams that they have remaining on their schedule, but none of them are going to be easy game. Even the Citadel is a really good FCS team, which you figure Carolina would win that game. But I'm just saying that there is no slam dunk. I mean, Georgia Tech certainly isn't. Carolina's won the last two. Tech had won 5 in a row before that. And I think it's like 14 in the last 18 or something like that. And no, that's just – but anyway, you just hope that maybe the Hurricane game doesn't decide the Coastal. Although right now, it's certainly playing a large role. Okay, basketball. Media day was this past week for the ACC. Neither you nor I was there because honestly, I don't think that event has much – for me and what I do – it doesn't have much value. Now, it has value for other people, not for me. Carolina was picked 2nd in the ACC behind Duke. Duke was also a very heavy favorite in the AP poll as preseason number 1, Carolina number 6.
I think 6th for Carolina in the AP seems borderline high, especially without Theo Pinson. But I never understand what that poll is for anyway. Is it talking about right now, or is it talking about this is how we think the teams will finish at the end of the year?
I think it is right now.
Well, then I think 6th is probably too high.
Yeah. Okay, here's the preseason poll. Duke, Carolina, Virginia at 3rd, Louisville 4, Syracuse 5, State 6, Notre Dame 7, Florida State 8, Miami 9. Miami 9 is too low. Yeah. I'm just going to go and tell you, Miami 9 is too low. They're going to be good this year. They got a bunch of dudes back. They got two, like, top 25 recruits coming in. And Jim Larranaga's a good coach.
Yeah.
He just is. Virginia Tech, 10. Clemson, 11. Yeah, there's Pitt at 12.
That seems too low. Kevin Stallings is a good coach.
Yeah. Then Wake, Georgia Tech, BC, closing things out. Of course, BC didn't win a game in the league last year. I saw somebody say Georgia Tech was it John Solomon or somebody tweeted out that he didn't think they would win a conference game all season long?
I saw that.
Seems a little crazy. I mean, to me, there's a lot of good teams. There could be 10, 11 teams to go to the tournament easy.
And you could lose 4 to 6 ACC games and still finish high up.
I think most teams will.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what people don't get. Is how hard this conference is when it's twice a week, man. And it's just really hard when, you just had to play like Duke and Virginia in back-to-back games. Oh, well, now you get a quote-unquote breather because you're going to go to Blacksburg and play Virginia Tech. That's hard.
And Buzz Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, the coaching in this league's really good. That's another good point. I do think the coaching in this league, I mean, compared to where it was a 10 years ago, there's some really good coaches. I mean, look at it. You got, obviously, Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams. Tony Bennett, really good coach. Rick Pitino, Jim Boeheim, Hall of Fame coaches. Mike Bray's a really good coach at Notre Dame. Jim Larrañaga, Buzz Williams, Kevin Stallings at Penn. I mean, they're just good coaches.
Well, and I think especially for what they're doing at where they are.
Yeah.
Like Mike Bray at Notre Dame. Notre Dame does not have the birthright to be as good as he has had them be.
Right.
But for whatever reason, he fits in there. It's a lot of coaches who are in their right fit.
Yes.
Like Mike Bray's in his right fit.
Yeah.
Tony Bennett's in his right fit at Virginia.
Buzz Williams, perfect at Virginia.
Yeah, he's good for them. You know where he'd be good.
Oh, I know what you're going to say. He would be great at State.
Yeah.
He'd be great there.
I hope that never happens.
His mentality and the way he coaches would be perfect for them.
Yes. That's the best thing about him being in the league is he will now not go to State.
So, Carolina has an exhibition on Friday.
Of this week.
Yeah, coming up in like a handful of days.
Yeah.
It's crazy that it's here. The Tar Heels did compete in their closed, they used to call them secret, but everybody knows what they are. I mean, these closed scrimmages, which I do think is a benefit. I like that Carolina, I mean, some teams do two public exhibitions. Carolina does one of these closed things and then one public one, which I think is the right way to handle it, it seems like. The Tar Heels were in Memphis and from reports, seem to have played pretty well. So, that's encouraging.
I think football should have that, too. Like, I think the spring game should be against another team.
I'm just thinking about that.
And it doesn't have to be a secret. It can go ahead and be...
Well,
like
I think the only thing is I don't think you could hit full speed.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't think you want to do that against another team.
Well, maybe it's like a preseason NFL game and you only play your first or second string.
Like
a
two
quarter.
Series or something like that.
And then you let the other guys play. I think that would be so much more interesting to fans. And I think baseball now does that, evidently, because Carolina baseball did that this fall. You can play a scrimmage against another team. You just find out more about your team, and it's more interesting.
The only other thing, I guess, travel cost. I mean, when you're moving a whole football team.
it's college football.
Oh, I know. But for Carolina,
right.
It wouldn't be a problem. Or for Alabama, I mean, none of those teams. But for Savannah State, it might be a problem. And I don't even know if they have football. I just picked a name.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some questions. This one is from Bo. Bo DM'd me with this question. He says, do we know the freshmen that are redshirting, specifically Chaz Surratt? He seems to Bo to be the future at the quarterback position for the Tar Heels. Well, Chaz Surratt is certainly going to redshirt unless every quarterback on the Tar Heels gets injured in these last couple of games and they just have no other options. And even if that happens, they may go and say, all right, TJ Logan, go be the Wildcat quarterback. Chaz Surratt is going to redshirt. I think at this point of the season, if you haven't played, it is more than likely, barring an absolute emergency, that you are going to redshirt. Gene Chizik, in talking to him about some of the defensive guys, he normally makes that decision in about the midpoint of the year, where it's at, okay, is it worth at this point? Is this somebody who has progressed enough to the point that they can help us win some games? And he did that with Marlon Dunlap this year, did with Jalen Dalton last year, where he came to the decision that it wasn't worth holding on to the red shirt for these particular guys because he thought they could help them win now. But I think now, 8 games in, if you hadn't played yet, you're going to redshirt, barring, again, some kind of crazy circumstance. I think the more interesting part of this question is the Chaz Surratt is, in Bo's opinion, the future of the quarterback position for Carolina. Chaz Surratt was Parade National Player of the Year, came from East Lincoln High School in Lincolnton, had all kinds of crazy numbers, is more of a Marquise Williams type of quarterback than he is a Mitch Trubisky type of quarterback. And by that, I mean he runs more. He is more athletic. He is not as accurate as Mitch Trubisky right now. Of course, he's only a freshman, and he's only going through practices. So is he the future of the quarterback position? I don't know that answer, but I think to harken back to a discussion you and I had a podcast or two ago, that answer may be found out sooner rather than later. as Mitch Trubisky continues to get a ton of national attention.
And has now, didn't Mel Kiper move him to number one
the
on his
number
quarterback
one quarterback
board?
On his board? So, and as soon as Mel Kiper does it, then you get the whole ESPN machine behind it.
Right, which is a real thing.
Yes.
I mean, it starts being something that is talked about, like, in their main part of their preparation.
Right.
They come see the nation's number one quarterback prospect, Mitch right. Trubisky, as he takes on the whoever's.
Yes.
And so, and that sort of drives itself.
Yes.
And so, it is a very real thing to think about.
You'll be interested to see what Carolina does in that position, because with Caleb Henderson leaving unexpectedly earlier this year, you know, now you've got Nathan Elliott, who is currently a redshirt freshman and seen a couple of kind of mop-up snaps this year. Then you have two highly recruited kids in Chaz Surratt and Logan Bird, who are both redshirting this year. And then after that, those are the only scholarship quarterbacks right now on Carolina's roster, unless I'm forgetting somebody. Manny Miles is a walk-on. So, and Carolina was not planning on bringing in a quarterback this year in the recruiting cycle because they were thinking that they had Caleb Henderson and, you know, who knows, they, and we don't know, Mitch Trubisky's going, leaving. We're not suggesting that, but it certainly is a possibility. So I think now Carolina's had to at least kind of rethink what it's doing there and may have to try to go get somebody.
And I think that's the thing is you can't say, oh, well, how did this happen? Well, it happened because nobody knew Mitch Trubisky was going to be this fantastic in one season.
Well, and to me, the bigger play is the Henderson leaving early. That's the one that, to me, kind of threw your numbers off a little bit. So we'll have to wait and see. Chaz Surratt certainly is talented. I think, though, to anoint him the quarterback of the future right now may be a little early.
Especially because of what we've talked about before, about what a run of quarterbacks Carolina is on.
Well, I will say this. Larry Fedora is very hands-on with his quarterbacks, and I think his track record is pretty good with what he's done with guys at that position.
Yeah.
So,
and at this point, you're with guys he's recruited to play his way.
Yes.
So it's not like he's got to take somebody who was made for a different system and fit him in there.
No.
All these players on the roster were recruited by him to play his style, and he believes they fit.
Can we just quickly, where we were talking about Pat Narduzzi, I'd like to give Larry Fedora credit for that. Like, he doesn't – I mean, he knows how he wants to play.
Yeah.
But think how – I mean, think how different Carolina is even this year compared to last year with Marquise Wentz. I mean, he – the backbone is still the same, but they mold it to what they have, which is what coaches – good coaches do. Pat Narduzzi is never going to listen to the podcast now. All right, Twitter question from our good friend at 2UNC3. I wish I knew his real name because he is an avid podcast listener. Chances that Carolina can get back in the coastal race here coming up. Now, Virginia Tech and Carolina actually have very similar schedules. They both play Georgia Tech. They both play Duke. Then Virginia Tech has its rivalry game against Virginia. Carolina has its one of its rivalry games against State. And then they play one out-of-conference game, although Virginia Tech is Notre Dame, I think, and Carolina's is the Citadel. So the chances that Carolina gets back in it, they each have three ACC games remaining. You know, I don't know. I think it is honestly about a 50-50 chance because Carolina, first of all, the Tar Heels have to win out, essentially, in league play, and they need Virginia Tech to lose one because you figure the Hokies aren't going to lose two of those three games. So could they lose any one of those games? Sure. Sure they could. They could lose Georgia Tech. Carolina could lose Georgia Tech. I think Duke is good enough to beat either one of those teams, although certainly Virginia Tech and Carolina I think are better, but they could lose. Either one of those teams could lose that game. And then who knows with Virginia? I really don't. I didn't think Virginia looked real good when Carolina played them, but they've also played some other teams, Louisville most notably. They played them pretty tight. So I don't know. I don't have a feel for that one.
Well, we both think Virginia is going to get somebody.
Yeah, maybe it's Virginia Tech.
For most of
Saturday. They want that game badly. I mean, they've lost 10 in a row. I don't know what the number is exactly, but it's close to that. If it's not that, that's not a huge exaggeration. I mean, they've lost a bunch in a row to Virginia Tech.
And I think you look at it on paper and think, well, Virginia Tech should beat all those teams. But all those teams are capable, and it wouldn't – they're at least as capable, if not more so, than Syracuse,
yeah,
who beat Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I do think the fact they lost that Syracuse game, though, you wouldn't expect them to relax any going into a game.
Right.
I wonder if they relaxed a little bit after they beat Carolina here, because yeah, they got a ton of positive press after that game and then lost a game that they probably feel like they shouldn't have lost.
It all starts with Carolina winning out.
Yeah, that's the first thing that has to happen for Carolina to even have a chance. So, is that possible? Yeah, I mean, I think certainly it could happen. But right now, all they're worried about is winning this week. The other question, this was a two-part question. The other part was, how nervous is Adam for Game 6 and potential Game 7 of the World Series?
I'm okay about 6. If 7 were to happen, I'd be stressed about that.
Really?
I mean, at this point, I think you're just happy to be there. And I think, I mean, and I can say that because I don't have to play in the game. But I think a few things. One, it was awesome to get to see Andrew Miller on that stage. Like, you and I both saw him in the College World Series. And to think about how far he's come and what a much more impressive beard he has now than he did when he was in the College World Series is really impressive. And like, he's that guy that no one in the stands wants to see come in the game.
Yeah, everybody goes,
Field. Yeah, like, even all he has to do is, like, stand up in the bullpen. Like, even if he's, like, he's sore and he needs to stretch his legs, and you hear this groan, and you think, like, that's all that is Andrew Miller. It's okay. And then he comes in and just strikes everybody out. So that part. The other thing is, I've never seen a happier sports environment than Wrigley Field this weekend. Everybody was in such a good mood.
Mm.
Because they were just so happy to be there.
Yeah.
Like, you're at the World Series at Wrigley Field. And you know how normally, like, somebody asks you to take a picture and you're like, yeah, fine, whatever. And so you'll take their picture for them or whatever. This weekend it was like, do you mind taking a picture? No, that'd be awesome. I'd be happy to. Would you mind taking one of me? Oh, no, that'd be great. We should definitely all take pictures, probably even together, even though we're all strangers, and preserve this moment. And, like, even to the point that police were doing it.
Wow.
I've never seen as many police as were at the games, or as many police not doing anything related to what police do.
Right.
Like buying programs, taking pictures.
Let me ask you. So you obviously watch, you've seen a ton of Cubs games, and you've seen them in person a bunch here lately, including all the games this weekend. Do you get the feel that this is, that they can do it? Or do you get the feel like this is the, they had to go one time, learn some lessons from it, and then, because they're, I mean, and you know more about it than I do, but they essentially are going to have a very similar team next year. I mean, obviously, there will be some changes, but they'll have a very similar team next year. Do you get a feel one way or the other on that?
I think it is because of the way the pitching lined up, it's possible they could do it. I mean, you got Jake Arrieta going Tuesday night, tonight, and he's capable of throwing a no-hitter.
Yeah.
And that takes you to Game 7, which anything could happen.
Yeah.
Anything. So, yeah, I think they're capable. I think they're probably still too early. But the window is so small. Like,
yeah,
you go very quickly from it's too early to, oh, now everybody thinks they're a big shot and you got problems in the clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the year where nobody thinks they're too big.
Yeah.
But that year's coming.
Yeah.
And so the other cool thing that happened this weekend that I thought perfectly summed it up about what this weekend was about was, so Saturday at Game 4 – we sat down, and then the two guys next to us got there shortly after us. And as soon as he got there, the guy next to me is, like, rummaging in his bag that he had brought in and pulls out this picture. And there was a rail in front of us, and he taped the picture on the rail. And the picture was of his dad. And
getting emotional.
And my wife texted. I texted my wife and told her, and she goes, did you get misty? And I was like, yes, I did.
A little misty.
But that's totally what it was about. Like, that was the kind of feel that it had.
It did seem like it was about that. But I can get that. Like, I mean, of all the, you know, when you're at places like Disney World, like I was, and I always kind of keep track of what sports teams I see represented, which, by the way, I saw, I think the whole time I only saw one Duke, one State, one East Carolina. And then not a ton of Carolina stuff. But I just didn't see a ton of college stuff. I saw an LSU, maybe an Alabama. But for the most part, Cubs. I mean, that is what I saw. And now, granted, I mean, clearly this time of year, if you're a Cubs fan and or even kind of like them, you're going to wear your stuff. But I saw a bunch of those shirts that said, just one time before I die.
Yeah.
And some of that is funny, but some of that's true. And I started thinking about it, and I thought about how different they are, because I think people who don't like the Cubs are sick of hearing about them at this point. But I do think about anybody else, and there's been that moment of success, even if it's just getting to the Super Bowl or two. I mean, there are a couple, the Browns and the Lions, I guess, from the NFL side of things. But for most everybody, there's been that moment. They haven't, I mean, no one in this lifetime, well, not no one, most people in this life haven't had that moment with them. This is that moment.
We were walking out of the game Sunday night, and I turned to my son Asher, who went with me, and I said, out of 6 billion people, or however many are on the earth, how many do you think are alive who've seen the Cubs win a World Series game at Wrigley Field?
Yeah.
There's like 45,000, because there was 42 there last on Sunday night.
Yep.
And I really think this is probably more for the Cubs Insider podcast. I think a big part of it is Wrigley Field.
Yeah.
Because you can go to the same place you went with your dad, who went with his dad, sit in the same seat, same thing, same neighborhood, same everything, and that's that connection that they have that I think some miss.
Can you watch it in the Bippity Boppity Boutique?
You can't watch ESPN it.
All right, some more questions. This is from our good friend at Guy Named Press. He wants to know, after listening to Jay Billis, is he crazy to think Jay Billis is a sleeper to be Duke's next head coach? And does he think that Carolina is going to try and hire a, quote, Carolina guy whenever Coach Williams is finished being the head coach at Carolina? Let's start off with the Jay Billis thing. I don't think that's crazy. I mean, I think that would totally depend on if Jay Billis wanted to do something like that. And two, because he can coach the basketball part. It would come down to the recruiting part. Mm-hmm. Could he recruit? Does he want to recruit? Because that is a grind, man. That's the hardest part. That's what all of them say. That the hardest part is that travel, the grind to go out and get players.
I really had not thought about that, and we talked on the air about like what might be next for Jay Billis, and that never crossed my mind. And I think part of that is because he dipped his foot into coaching and got out.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the reverse Hubert Davis situation. He tried it, and it seems like, as we said, he's very smart and would be successful at what he did. If that was something that was his passion, I think he would be doing it. And so I don't really see that.
No, I don't think it's a totally unheard of idea. I don't think that will happen, though.
I think if you're Duke, you call him.
You at least ask.
And say, A, are you interested? We don't think you are. And B, if you're not, okay, then who?
Right. So part two of that is, do we think Carolina's... Yeah, I don't know. This is my opinion. I think Roy Williams will at least have some form of input in what happens when he is done. Now, I don't know what that means, but I don't think I just think that means just what I said. I just think he will have some sort of input.
I think the great thing is that you're a number of years away from having to make that decision. And so that gives time to people like a Jared Haas or and anyone else, someone who we're not even thinking of right now, to have 4 or 5 years and show 5, 10, 15 years, whatever, show that they're capable of doing it. It's not like it's a got to know right now.
Right. The other – Jay Billis really did make a good point. I don't think Carolina fans realize how unbelievably crazy it is that Roy Williams was right there to be the next Carolina basketball coach on the redo, you know, on the second attempt. I mean, that doesn't happen. You don't go from one of the, in our opinion, the number one, but in, I think, anyone's opinion, one of the two or three best college basketball coaches of all time in Dean Smith, to then you just, I'm just going to pluck another one of the 10 best college basketball coaches in the history of the game to come be the next head coach. That doesn't happen very often.
Yeah. Well, and I think people may gain a greater perspective when Duke has to do it.
Yeah.
Because unless they get incredibly fortunate, as Carolina did, it's just going to be different.
Yep. All right, one more Twitter question. This is from Sean. Sean wants to know if we could look at the two FCS teams on Carolina's schedule, that being JMU and the Citadel, and check out their rating like a Sagarin rating or something, and compare that to some FBS teams, because he thinks the fact that Carolina is playing two FCS teams is a stigma that hurts them.
This was a good question.
Yes, and I totally agree that it is a stigma that hurts mm-hmm. them. We know it did last year.
Yes.
We know it did. Jeff Long said it, mm-hmm. the head of the playoff committee last year, which I think was dumb.
Yes. That he said it?
That, A, he said it, yes. And, B, I think that the theory is dumb.
I agree with that.
The point is dumb.
Yes.
If you're going to take – because it's almost like saying, okay, well, we're going to take everybody on basis of who they are in their season – except for if you play an FCS team, we're not going to actually look and see what that FCS team has done or how good they are. We just know they're FCS, and so that equals bad. That's essentially what he was saying at that point. So Carolina's two FCS teams this year, JMU and the Citadel. And this, you probably know this by now, but the reason Carolina is having to play two is because of some backing out and changes in schedules from some teams like Ohio State and Minnesota and some others that Carolina had scheduled, but for various reasons dropped off the schedule. And so just when that happens, you got to scramble to find somebody. And unless you want to play pay San Diego State $1 million to come across the country and play you one time, then you end up playing some teams like this. So Jeff Sagarin does do full ratings, and he has FBS and FCS teams all included. So in that rank, and there's like 200 and some, or maybe 300, whatever teams in this order. I think it's 273 when you add the two combined. JMU comes in at 97 overall. That is including FBS and FCS. And then the Citadel comes in at 113. So both in the upper half of these full total rankings. Just some ideas of some teams that are in between those two, JMU and the Citadel, Georgia Southern, UConn, Purdue. Then below the Citadel, you've got Kansas, Rutgers, Rice, FIU, that's Florida International, FAU, Florida Atlantic, all teams that we've all heard of, and that teams, Old Dominion, all teams that teams in the ACC have played. So to the point that Sean is making, just because those teams are FCS – doesn't mean that they are easy games or bad teams. Now, certainly as an FBS team, you have more scholarships to work with, you have more money, you inherently have some advantages there. You are likely going to be favored to win the game. But that doesn't mean these teams are bad, and it certainly doesn't mean that they are worse than Rutgers just because they play with less scholarships or in a different conference.
I've got to think the phone is ringing off the hook at the Kansas Athletic Department office with teams looking to play them.
Yeah.
Because if you go play Kansas, no one will say anything about it.
Nope.
Because you played a Power 5 team.
Yep.
They're not good.
No.
It's not just that they're pretty not good. They're bad. But you get so much more credit for playing them. And if Kansas and James Madison played right now.
Yeah.
I think there's a reasonable chance James Madison would win. But because you played James Madison, you get the negative mark in the book of football.
It is, I do think, to Sean's point, it is silly that you automatically just, it's a negative just because you played them. It's silly that it's just automatically that way. I mean, North Dakota State or whoever is, I mean, in the Sagarin ratings, they're like in the top 40. I mean, they're some really good FCS teams.
Well, and where do some of the best coaches come from?
Yeah, of course.
They come up that way.
Yeah.
So I think that deserves something.
So good questions. Adam, anything else?
At this time of year, I always remember how old and mean I am.
Yeah.
But there's a few things that bother me about Halloween. Mm. One, the kids that come to the door and don't say trick or treat.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
What I do is, if I open the door and they don't say anything, you just hold out the bag, I just stare at them.
Yeah. Be like, yes?
What are you here for? I don't understand.
Would you like some assistance?
Say trick or treat.
Yeah.
That's when you realize how annoying some kids are and what a bad job their parents did. Two, giving out bad candy. Mm. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
They shouldn't even sell the bad candy because it just encourages idiots to buy it.
I don't like Twizzlers.
Drew loves Twizzlers, and I don't get it.
I don't like it at all.
I don't like them
at all. I don't like Whoppers.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't like candy corn. I got no problem with candy corn. I mean, it's not my favorite.
There's only two times of that you ever remember that some of this candy exists. One, Halloween. Yeah. Two, when you go to the movies.
Yeah.
When would you ever think about Whoppers any other time than if you're at the movie or you're looking in your trick-or-treat bag?
Yeah.
Who goes to the store and is like, give me some Whoppers?
Yeah, if I'm going to voluntarily buy candy, it's going to be like Snickers.
Yeah.
Three Musketeers.
Yes.
Twix.
Reese's.
Reese's. You know, Twix is underrated.
Yeah.
They're good. And you know I don't like Smarties.
Yeah.
Smarties are garbage. Jimbo Fisher and I can agree on that.
They're cowardly and
They're
gutless.
Cowardly and gutless.
Yeah. Well, and get
Smarties and Twizzlers. Twizzlers is just like eating wax. Why would I ever do that?
Giving out Smarties is such a cop-out. You cared enough to go get the candy, and you saw all the choices, and you decided on Smarties. That's like what teachers give out in school because they don't want to spend a lot of money on the good candy, which is understandable.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, we'll give them Smarties, and they'll think they've got candy. Even
is that like discount candy?
Yeah, it's like it's colored sugar. Yeah. I'm going to give them that. That's not real candy.
I'd rather have one of the sticks that you just pour the sugar in your mouth.
The Pixie sticks?
At that point, just give me the stick of sugar.
Yeah, let's don't go on with this charade that I'm going to have to eat it in some sort of solid form. The other thing that bugs me is kids that come to the door not dressed up. I should not be obligated to give you candy just because you come to my door.
Do you have a lot of kids coming here just in their regular clothes holding out like garbage bags?
Not anymore. Not since word got around. That's where the old crotchety guy lives. But, you know, like when a kid comes to the door, well, you've got younger kids in your neighborhood. You've got a good neighborhood for trick-or-treating. I'm going to give everybody your home address so they can come by and see you. But, you know, when you get like that 13 or 14-year-old and they didn't care enough to get dressed up, but they still want the candy, and so they throw on like the Aaron Rodgers jersey, and they're like, I'm Aaron Rodgers. Like, no, you're not. You just came home from school. You get no candy, and you didn't say trick-or-treat. I'm egging your house.
It's really more of a home invasion at that point. all right, so don't go to Adam's house unless you are properly dressed up. We've learned that today.
And you say trick-or-treat.
Yeah.
Those are the two important things.
All right, anything else before we shut it down and get moving towards our second podcast of the week coming up?
I feel like this was the wide world of sports podcast because of the bye week. Like the skier just went tumbling down the hill and ran into the tree.
That's all right. We had lots of things to talk about. And we'll focus in on the Tar Heels coming up later this week. Of course, we'll look ahead to the matchup with Georgia Tech. We also will talk a little bit about this exhibition basketball game and maybe some of the things that we'll be looking for from the Tar Heels in that particular game. Hoping to have a great guest. We haven't really we have some ideas of who it may be, but we don't know for sure yet. Coming up in the next couple of weeks, we've got some plans for some great guests, but we'll have to wait and see if it pans out or not. All right, thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on the Carolina Insider.
The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.
With a Wealthfront cash account, your uninvested cash earns 4% annual percentage yield from partner banks with free instant withdrawals, even on weekends and holidays. 4% APY is not a promotional rate, and there's no limit to what you can deposit and earn. Wealthfront, money works better here. Go to Wealthfront.com to start today. Cash account offered by Wealthfront Brokerage, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Wealthfront is not a bank. The APY on cash deposits as of December 27, 2024 is representative, subject to change, and requires no minimum. Funds in the cash account are swept to partner banks where they earn the variable APY.